In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. Today, we have a sort of an update and an announcement. Carl, thank you for always being here to run the show. I don't know what I would do without you. Really appreciate it. And I want to welcome today's guests. One is a returning champion. We call him a returning champion. He was in a few months ago to try to unpack the sort of odd situation at the Christina School Board. Doug Manley. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing great. Which odd situation would this be?
That's what I mean. We got it. There's so many of them. We can't even, you know, you have to be specific. And also joining Doug is another member of the Christina School Board, Monica Moriak. How are you?
I'm doing good. Happy to be here.
I pronounced your name correctly.
You did. I'm impressed.
Oh, wow. I usually butcher that stuff. But welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So it's an update sort of episode first. I guess the situation was we had an absentee board member.
Had?
Well, at that time we had and we still have. Is that a fair? Have we seen hide nor hair of this gentleman since we last spoke? Was it last year we spoke, or was it earlier this year?
I think it was late last year.
Late
last year. To the best of my knowledge, he has not set foot in the United States since January 15th of 2024. Probably earlier than that. But January 15th is the last day I can guarantee he was absolutely not here.
And we also spoke... Well, there's a second part of that story. Some of the particular dealings of that individual and their spouse had been brought into question. She was the head of school at a charter school of some fashion.
A private school, yes.
Private school. So we're not going to rehash that all, but you can go back and sort of listen to that that rundown. The other part of it was the dismissal of the superintendent under sort of odd circumstances, because there wasn't really any circumstances. It was just like we're doing it, and so that is still. In the interim, I will say one of the updates to that story is that an interim superintendent was hired.
Yes.
And one thing that we maybe touched on last year but didn't speak about a lot is there was a referendum that was planned for around this time this year, but that was canceled. The reason it was canceled, I guess, that was reported was that, you know, we had this reassessment, this real estate tax reassessment, and, you know, that's going to impact different people with their local taxes, so maybe now was not the best time to do it. Was there any other, I mean, it's just the situation on the board, was that considered as maybe now's not a good time to ask for money since we don't have our shit together? I mean, is that kind of...
I absolutely considered it. So there's three main factors going into it. One, like you mentioned, the reassessment and the state law around the wiggle room in the reassessment. So I think we talked about last time, there's a 10% wiggle room you can have, which means that as part of reassessment, we can just quietly increase taxes 10%, cover what we needed to cover with the referendum, and then we can have this discussion again in 5 years at the next reassessment, because they will be every 5 years going forward. So that's option one. So with the expected additional revenue, we didn't need to immediately go for referendum. We also have been slowly but gradually improving the accounting and the, I don't want to say money shuffling, but basically there are monies that are available for certain purposes, and we have been doing a better job of categorizing and placing our spending in the buckets that most benefit us. So we've been trying to move things out of unrestricted local funds. So unrestricted local funds are what we do when we tax your property. We can take that money, use it for anything we want. A good chunk of it goes to charter schools. I think we talked about that last time.
Yes.
A good chunk of the rest of it goes to salary, and then a little bit is kind of what we have to play with, and there's not a whole lot left after those two. We have, as a district, over the last 10 years, been slowly getting better at trying to move spending away from our local funds and into state funds. So the state will pay for all kinds of things. And if you don't let the state pay for those things, you're leaving money on the table. And so we've been leaving money on the table in various places for decades. And we've been slowly doing better and better and better at getting, using, playing the state's game to use the state's buckets to pay for the things that we need to pay for. So that, the reassessment, and then, yes, obviously, the discord and chaos, all three of those are factors that definitely went through my head as we were discussing, you know, can we postpone the referendum? You know, we'll see what happens. Do we need to do one next year? I don't think so, but that'll be a discussion for another time.
So the big issue that I want to sort of report out on, because it's very interesting. One of the things that we talked about in reference to some of the board's issues and dismissing the superintendent and being absentee was that there are rules around some of this stuff. And so in order to try to, I guess, enforce those rules, we are doing the thing that Delawareans are you know, are sort of programmed to do. We're going to the court of equity, baby. we're equitying up. We're going to try to get an equitable resolution from the court of equity, known as the Court of Chancery. I guess there's paperwork being prepared or has been prepared. I don't know if it's been filed yet. But can you talk about what the suit is going to be at the Court of Chancery and what kind of equity the board is going to be seeking?
I think you left out the most important part, which is that this is a bunker exclusive.
This is a bunker exclusive. Nobody knows this. Tomorrow, people are going to be going crazy. This will be out tomorrow. People would be like, are you telling me that the board is taking these issues to the Court of Chancery? Yes, that's what we're telling you. It's real. It's a real thing.
So we've got a two-pronged approach here. So the first prong is we are going straight to the Board of Chancery. By we, I mean me. So this is Doug Manley in his personal capacity.
It's not the board.
not a board action.
We did not
action.
Vote on it.
Okay, this is not. So let's be very clear, folks. I've already made a mistake.
We did this not vote on it, so this is not this board
is,
action.
This is D.D. Manley v. somebody in front of the Court of Chancery.
Yes, and by the time you hear this, I hope the paperwork has been filed. It is in progress right now. So we'll see how that goes, but yes, bunker exclusive, this is happening.
Well, we should have done it. Exclusive.
We'll have to get Carl to get that sound effect for next time.
It might be in tomorrow. We don't know. Post-production. There's things you can do in post-production. You have no idea.
So prong one, yes, we're going to Chancery Court, and we're suing for a remedy. Basically, what we're asking for is that the court decide on the residency of Bakir. So very clearly, he is not a resident in any form of plain English that I've ever heard. Last year, when we were bringing this up during the board meetings, making points of order about it, while he still showed up even remotely at board meetings, he hasn't really done that much anymore in recent months. There was a provision that I would argue had some merit. It looked like he wouldn't be a resident. It was very fuzzy. It has now been over 12 months since he has not set foot in this country. I think we're up to 14 now. Once you cross the 12-month mark, it's a little clearer about how residency works. So before, the only thing that I could find that worked was like this weird provision of the tax code, where it defined who was and wasn't a resident, and it was very fuzzy in a lot of weird ways. Now we're at the point where if he were over 65, he would not qualify for any senior citizen benefits in Delaware because he would have been termed to have abandoned his residency by not being there for 12 months. Similarly, if he were in a municipality, so if he lived in City of Newark, he would no longer live in City of Newark because the code very clearly states he would have abandoned his residency. So there's a few other places where, you know, now that it's been a full year, very clearly he's not a resident. And so we're asking the Court of Chancery to just make the determination for us, please. Clearly he's not a resident. All you have to do is take a look at his passport. That'll tell you he hasn't set foot in the country in over a year. Let's make that determination, and we can be done with it. So that's prong one. That's our friend, the Chancery Court. Prong two is I'm going to be filing a complaint with the district, because according to Delaware law, it is the district's job to notify the Department of Elections when there is a vacancy. So very clearly there's a vacancy, plain English. He is not a resident, therefore he is not a board member. However, in order for this to be executed, the district has to send, you know, a piece of paper to DOE saying, hey, this guy, there's a vacancy, let's hold a new election. So I'm filing a complaint with the district telling them, read the law, it's plain English, he's not a board member, please submit the paperwork to the district. So two-pronged approach, we'll see how it goes.
This is very interesting. And I remember, I have to give you credit where credit is due. These were issues that you were sort of banging around when we talked last year. And I remember you looking at some of this and saying, yeah, it's going to be a lot clearer when we hit that 12 months, it's going to be a lot clearer that he's sort of abandoned his residency. And that will trigger, you know, basically an open seat and a reelection. So that's these two acts are to basically do that, to trigger an election in his what do you call it?
His nominating district.
Nominating district, A, B, C, whatever it is.
Yes.
What kind? The good. I don't know if you get a feel for this. I don't actually really have a feel for this, but I know the Court of Chancery does, you know, hear these kind of sort of, I don't want to say off the wall cases, but just like, hey, we need some kind of legal decision here, and often they can come to that decision rather quickly. Do you have any idea, or has any sort of anybody who's given you legal advice have any idea of what the turnaround time for that would be?
So on the optimistic case, we could be looking at like a couple of weeks to a month, but it's Court of Chancery, who knows? I'm hoping that we get a little bit of publicity from this, a little bit of public outrage, and maybe the Chancery moves a little fast.
Look, I happen to know, Carl knows this too, that the Highlands Bunker podcast is known within the court and the people attached to the court. We are huge fans of Vice Chancellor Laster, of Chancellor McCormick. So yeah, let's get to it. Let's do it. do you think the district is going to basically say, well, we're going to wait for a decision from the court before we make a move? I mean, they wouldn't have to do that under other circumstances, but it seems as if, you know, based on the divisiveness and the three-four vote on the board and everything, that maybe they won't even take any action until you get an answer from the court.
So I don't know. One of the interesting aspects is, since the second prong is going to be basically filing a complaint with the district lawyer would then have to deal with me in two capacities, one as part of the board, one as the person complaining. There is a chance that maybe he punts it to a third-party group to make that determination due to conflicts. If that's the case, then maybe that third-party group, you know, doesn't get swayed by the current leadership of the board and does its job properly. And they'll make that determine right away and send the letter. So I think that is a possible outcome, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, let's hope finally sort of rational heads prevail. I guess last question on that, how I know that since we talked the last time, I guess we're calling it like a caretaker or interim superintendent. How is that going? I mean, the reason I say that is like there's sort of a situation, and I follow the football from Europe, and you know, when teams are not doing well and clubs are not doing well, you know, they'll sack the manager. But depending on when they do it, they might just put in like the assistant or some old player or like a real old manager who just to, you know, just to go for 2 or 3 months or whatever, call him the caretaker boss or the interim manager. And, you know, it sort of creates a situation where there's a boss, but there isn't a boss. How's it been working? I mean, is at least has it smoothed things out a little bit? Is at least there somebody there to sort of manage the day to day, or has it still been just as difficult as it was before? Or no comment.
All things considered, I think it's working as well as I could possibly hope.
Okay.
Given the situation we put the district in.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Monica, here we go.
Okay.
This is the second big exclusive. I don't know if this is an exclusive or not, actually.
It's a bunker exclusive.
It's another
bunker. We're doing it.
Two bunker exclusives,
baby. This is his exclusive. Let's see how it
goes.
Hold on.
So you are currently a member of the board, but I think you're seeking perhaps more responsibility. Can we say that? Can we announce that publicly now?
So I am a member of the board. I've been a member for almost 5 years. And I definitely am putting it out there that I would be willing to be president of the board. I think I have the experience. I think I have, some of the knowledge. I've been playing around, watching, you know, listening to staff, being in the buildings. And I said this before when they voted in Mr. Patton, that I'm not sure why we wanted the same leadership after the first year and why we did it again. We're doing some new things. Maybe it's time for some new leadership. The effective school boards training that we're going through, there'll be some new superintendent at some point, ideally somewhere. We still have the lawsuit to deal with. There's just a lot. I think I'm ready to lead, and I'm putting my hat in the ring. It'll be up to at least 4 board members to agree with me. Well, myself and 3 others. It takes a vote of 4.
Yeah, so how does that work, given the situation where we have an absentee board member, we have a interim superintendent, we have board members now that are still sort of, is the whole board a party to the lawsuit of the previous superintendent?
There are 5 suits. So one against the board as a whole, and then 4 against Patton, Smith, Tucker, Lou, and Buck here.
Yeah, so the 4 that voted to dismiss are 1 block, and then the board itself.
Yes.
So from a raw numbers standpoint, or electoral standpoint, when would the board consider a vote for a new president?
So we're required by law to reorganize in July of every year.
Okay.
We will seat new board members. And then we will, there's a process that you follow for reorganization, which I believe is assigning the superintendent as executive secretary. And then he leads the original vote, the first vote for board president. And then once that is decided, the board president takes over and there's a vote for vice president. And then after that, there are a variety of places that we may want liaisons, and we have voted for those type of liaisons, say, when we were members of the Delaware School Boards Association. There would be a liaison to the school board, the DSBA, and a legislative liaison. And officially, we would vote on those, but for the most part, people volunteer. It's rare that you have, like, 2 or 3 people like, yes, I want it. Frequently, it's one person then says, I'll be a backup. And so we officially vote them in. I'm not sure whether or not state law requires that. I think there's some leeway in that. There's a policy that we have around that. So all of that is kind of open. But state law requires us to assign the executive secretary, vote for president, vote for vice president. And that's in July.
So regardless of electoral stuff and new members, you're always going to be reorganizing once a year in July,
yes,
basically, and then reconstituting yourself in whatever way you guys vote to do.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So I guess the the elephant in the room is that, you know, it's going to be a board vote. Well, all of the board votes have been basically two blocks, a 4-3 block all along, which is sort of how we got into this. Hmm. Now, unfortunately, I don't know if any more light has been shed on sort of the influences or the point of all of this. Like, you know, why was the superintendent released? Why, and this is all part of the lawsuit, obviously, but because we haven't had a lot of light shed on that to figure out why these two voting blocks are sort of doing this stuff, how is that going to work in July? Or do we hope that some of this will flesh that out? You know, if for example, it's official that our Pakistani friend has abandoned the seat and it's 3-3 come July, that's possible, right?
That is possible.
And then it just becomes a dead heat, and we have to sort of sort that out from politically at the board. Is that the most likely outcome at this point? Because I suppose there wouldn't be an election to fill the seat until after July.
So we've got a couple of avenues. Right now, Alethea Smith Tucker, who's the current vice president, her seat is up in May for election. She is not running. So no matter what, she's gone. So okay. In July, there will be at least one new board member. And that person would be from that 4 block. So whoever is the new board member potentially has a lot of swing on how things go going forward. The other avenue, depending on how fast the Department of Elections receives the official vacancy notice, the board could seat somebody sooner than July. It would be tough, but there is a potential that someone new could be seated before July. So a couple of options.
You guys are really in the middle of it right now. I guess this is why people say, hey, you should run for school board first. There's a lot of stuff going on at the school board. I see that. This
cannot
is crazy stuff.
Tell you just how much time is wasted on all of this bullshit. Dealing with votes and this and that and people who are hiding out in Pakistan and petty squabbles. Like this board, and I've said it in public, I'll say it again, this board has done absolutely nothing for the kids, except we did pay for one garden one time. Other than that, we have just been nothing but dysfunction, a headache for staff, a headache for parents, a headache for, you know, the state. We've got multiple bills coming through based on the dysfunction that this school board has wrought upon the land. It is just insane. But yes, run for local school board. Even if you are just a normal person who's halfway sane, you will potentially be the life-saving vote in many, many children's lives, given the kinds of people we've had to deal with.
I mean, I'm not an expert at this. I talked to you. I've talked to people from Red Clay. We've had different discussions about different sort of education issues over the years here. I would say I would recommend somebody who's just a regular person that's halfway sane. I think that would be preferable to whatever it is we've been doing. I guess that kind of leads to a question for Monica. How do you feel? Do you feel like you have a handle on sort of what's been the wedge in these two voting blocks, and how do you think that you can sort of address that in some fashion? And I'll be real clear. It's not like I don't want to make it sound like a gotcha question. I think one of the things that Doug and I discussed when we talked about this, you know, several months ago, was that, you know, there's always this a specter of charter schools, private interests, because money's involved, and there are, you know, nonprofit organizations and other organizations that would prefer, you know, money going to other interests than the public interest. Is that something that we feel like that's the biggest sort of divisive wedge here? And if that is, how does that get addressed?
So I do not know what the divisiveness is based on truly. I know what I see is this disconnect between what we say is for student outcomes and what our actions are, right? I see disconnects between words and actions, and I lean towards your actions over your words, right? I'll start with your words, but if your actions don't seem to follow that up, I think there's maybe a misunderstanding about what the role of a school board member is. And we've had these conversations, and I know when I first got on the board, I really did feel like, okay, I'm supposed to ask these questions, I'm supposed to look at this, but isn't this their work? Like, is this really governance? It really is something that I think people, there are many, many people across the country who think about getting on school boards because they don't like this coach, or they don't like this teacher, or they don't like this program. If I get on, I can vote it off. But that's not really our job. And so we have contracted with Effective School Board Training and A.J. Crabill. And I think everybody who has done the program across the school board finds value in it. There's a belief in it. And
Can you give a little more detail about what this is? So it's a training program for basically school board members to talk about sort of responsibilities, how to do their work, how to optimize people's time and all that. Is that what we're sort of talking about? But it's specific for public school board
members. Yes. So we've done some training. I've read the book. It's Great on Their Behalf by A.J. Crabill. I recommend it for absolutely anybody and everybody who has any interest in the education in their community, their family, their friends, what have you. I mean, it really felt like a guidebook to what we're supposed to be doing, right? I'm sure Doug knows or felt this. We're a little bit too in the weeds, right? Like, this feels administrative, but yet we felt like we needed to be there, right? And I think part of that is because people had been in the administration part of it, the administrative, not the governance side. And so you're like, well, everything's happening there. If I'm going to be on the board, I guess I need to be up there where that is. And there is sort of this feeling that I had that if things are happening that seem to be detrimental to the running of the school district because we're too much in the administrative side, I feel like I need to know what's going on so that I can speak to it. I honestly believe that if adults had conversations and talked through things, we would come to a reasonable understanding. I have learned in the last 2 years that is not always a true case. I'm an optimist. I'm also a realist, but I am a positive person. I'm an eternal optimist. I believe in that. But I also believe once you show me who you are and you've had a couple of chances, then I believe you. And so I'll work from there. But I will try to work with just about anybody to move equity education forward. So this program basically is we need to worry 100% about student outcomes, not adult inputs, not adult outcomes, not student inputs, student outcomes. And that is very limited to specific data points and things that you can look at that basically are saying we want to know what do students know and what are they able to do? How are students being set up to have freedom of choice as adults when they get out? Because students don't get to take their lunch home with them. When they graduate, they're not taking the meals that we make sure they have. They're not taking their textbooks. They're not taking their tutors. Those are all adult inputs. So when they graduate, we need to make sure that they have with them things that they know and are able to do so that they now have freedom of choice going forward as adults. So that's what this program is. I would say probably close to 90% of what we're doing is going to go out the window. And I honestly think being a school board member will get significantly easier because there's a lot less that I have to worry about because I don't even have to think about administrative work because I'm not an administrator. That's superintendent work. I ask some questions. They give me information. There's a series of questions that we can go through based on. So there's three types of questions, technical, tactical, and strategic. So those are the type of questions. Over 50% of our board meeting needs to be specific on goals and what those look like. Our goals are developed and designed after we as board members have had listening sessions with the public, and we develop goals and guardrails based on the vision and values of our community. And by listening sessions, I don't mean that we're going to invite people in, because that's important. We're going to do that. But if anybody's followed school boards, that type of thing is very difficult to do, and probably because everybody's just turned off about what's happening on the school board. So why am I coming into your space? But I can go to your space. I can go to your community meetings. I can go to maybe a meeting at your church or someplace. And my job is just to listen to what you have to say and distill that down into 3 to 5 goals, 1 to 5 goals. I think 2 is about all we can handle, is my personal preference, but it is a board decision. And they're like 5-year goals. And then you take those goals down and you're like, okay, well, if we're going to get here in 5 years, we need to get at least this far, 1, 2, 3. And then, so how are we going to look at this goal and take it apart each month? And those are the superintendent's evaluation goals. It all aligns. It's really very simple in a lot of ways, but it's going to take some work for us to change our mindset. It is a mindset about student outcomes don't change until adult input changes.
Yeah, it seems like it's also a mindset of, and I'd never thought of it this way, but you explained it clearly enough. It's sort of a mindset of like, the board is not, you know, managing the school district. You know, the administration of the school district manages the school district. And it seems to me now, based on what you said and what I've learned over the year or so, is that the board, for whatever reason, got ahead of its skis or overstepped its mark in trying to apply its own ideas to the management of the school district. And what's even funnier is they wanted to do that but not tell you what they were doing. Like, you'd think, okay, if you're gonna get involved, and I think you were very clear in our articulating it, it's like people want to be like, well, I don't like these textbooks, or I don't like the curriculum, or I don't like this program, or I don't like this teacher or coach or whatever, and I'm going to run for school board. And then, you know, it's pretty clear that you're overstepping your mark, or you're outside your lane. Yes. You know, your role does not do this. That's one thing. But to not even say any of that but do it, it's like, that's a little bit weird. It's like, I'm going to get involved in what this superintendent's doing and how they're managing this district. But like, what they're doing wrong, or what I disagree with, or what I want, I'm not even really going to articulate what it is. It's a very odd situation.
Yes, it is.
But I think breaking it down like that and making a line of demarcation between, okay, this is administrative work, and this is sort of governance work. This is oversight work. This is sort of like, I'm going to keep you on track, or, you know, just do due diligence on how these things are progressing, because this is our, you know, our long-term plan. It makes perfect sense.
Yes. It's often surprised me the number of people that I have met who have a list of boards that they're on. And I was on the board of SCORE for a few years. And when I got the position on the board of Priscina.
What is SCORE?
SCORE is a it's a volunteer group associated with SBA to mentor business entrepreneurship. So it comes from the Small Business Association, and so it's a group of volunteers it's people who have retired or not retired, but they're mentoring people starting a small business. So there's a lot of good in that, I believe. But I was like, well, I can't put the time into this and this. And I will say, I put a lot of time into school board is probably too specific a word. I put a lot of time in my belief of education equity. And so I don't want anybody to feel that they can't run for school board because they can't put the time in that I put in. I've seen this as kind of my life's work, is advocating for improved equity. I listen to state meetings around the education funding, around equalization. I meet with legislators, meet with people from like working parties, family, or whomever, things in the city of Wilmington, because I I believe in the value of education. I believe every child can succeed. And I think we have too many barriers in front of those successions. And I want to figure out, how can I bring down those barriers? And what is it that people are really struggling with when you have a conference? Oh, well, we can't do this because, okay, wait, let's get away from, like, okay, we can't even think about changing school start times because it'll affect sports. Okay. Right now it's affecting education. So let's step back. Is there a way to solve that problem differently? And it's about, I tell everybody now, I jumped out of the box and we'll look back in the box for some information if we need it. But for now, what if we started from scratch today? What if we were designing something today based on the research that we know, based on asking teachers, what is it that you need in your classroom? How would you design your day for the best education of your students? Because they know what that answer is.
Yeah. I think one of the issues, and I think this is not unique to school boards, but it's this idea that people are sort of ideologically opposed to certain things. And sometimes they come out and say it. Sometimes they don't. But because of ideological reasons, they almost cannot take the approach that you're talking about. They're restricted by the thing that they think they need to be doing, and they won't get out of the box. Do you know what
right.
I mean?
Yes.
And I'm just happy to hear that somebody is getting out of the box. That sounds excellent. And I'm always happy that somebody's stepping up too, because I know it's it takes a lot of guts to step up and be like, you know, I'm going to do it. I've been with the board 5 years. I'm going through this, all of this training. I have this other sort of experience. I'm going to do it. So I give you a lot of credit for that. That's really cool.
I appreciate it. It's also a very privileged space that I live in because I do not need a full-time job to make ends meet. My kids are out of college, so I don't have that pull, right? I'm definitely been impressed with colleagues who had children still in the school system, and they're dealing with some of what's happening on our board. And I find that to be quite impressive. So I recognize the privileged space that I live in, and that I want to then recognize there are things that I can do with that. I think that people live in a lot of fear of the unknown. I think there's a lot of fear around this idea that life is pie. And if you get something, then I'm going to lose something. And I don't think that's true. I think we can do multiple things at once. And the best I can do at this point is having these conversations with different people and acknowledging what they're feeling, because their feelings are real. But then maybe pushing a little bit, getting them to think and question, could I do it differently? Getting, like we talk about with our students, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Hey, I'm going to be in an uncomfortable space. And I don't know that in our society today, we are comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think that's where a lot of things, a lot of this ideological stuff comes from, is that I'm uncomfortable with two guys being married, so therefore it's wrong. Not necessarily, it's just uncomfortable for me. Maybe because it's new. Maybe because I don't understand it. I should get myself in uncomfortable positions at some point in my lifetime, because that's the only way I'm going to grow.
Yeah, I think it comes from also sort of, I think you're right, accepting it's uncomfortable, but also realizing it has nothing to, something like that at least, or even school stuff. Like I don't know who on the board has kids or doesn't have kids, or whether, you know, what their experiences are. But as long as you come into it with an idea of, you know, it's not just about me or what I think. Like, that's the biggest hurdle, whether it's a social issue or a public policy issue or whatever. Yeah, you might not like it, but you not liking it or being sort of ideologically opposed to it really is not the top line issue here. Like, there's other outcomes that we're looking to do, and we can work around it. We can sort of assuage your your concern or whatever. But yeah, it's like a selfish thing. Like, it's what I feel about it.
Right.
That's what I'm going to do. How I don't like it. It makes me feel weird, and so I'm going to put a stop to it. Well, it's not really about how you what you think of it. There's a much bigger picture.
True.
Much bigger things going on.
But do you still think it boils down with the idea that I'm feeling uncomfortable, so let me make that uncomfortableness go away?
Yeah.
And I just think the people who learn to live with uncomfortableness and get through that on differing levels are the ones who show the most growth and largely are probably happier and have more success in life because we all go through that. And so it's recognizing, oh, I guess I'm growing and I don't know where this is going to go, because I will tell you, I've been in a lot of uncomfortable positions in public in the last year and a half. And I was like, well, I'm going to stick with the truth and stick with what I know. And go from there.
Like this, I feel like I'm in with my therapist. I feel like I owe you $120 for the hour. I'm like, yeah, you're right about that. Talking about me almost. No, I like it. I hope that this can finally get some closure on just the bigger issues. I mean. I suppose that the other members of the board don't know that you're taking this step.
Bunker exclusive, baby. Bunker,
so, okay, I just wanted to... So that leads to sort of maybe the last thing I want to talk about. So we have time. So this stuff's getting filed imminently, we'll say.
Imminently.
We're going to file all of this stuff imminently. We have somebody who's willing to step up in July and stand for president, who's already on the board. We have an open seat that's going to be filled. Do we have any idea who is interested in standing for that seat in the election?
There are two candidates. There's two filing deadlines over. So it's going to be those two going into it in May.
Who are these two?
We have Janine Campbell.
Janine Campbell.
And we have Shannon
Troncoso.
I'm going to mess it up. Shannon Troncoso.
Shannon Troncoso.
They're both Wilmington residents because it was a Wilmington seat that was up.
Okay. Oh, look at that! Right here in the right around our environs.
Unlike some alleged board members, you know, they live here.
Well, kinda, that's good.
Kind of weird.
Do we have a feeling about sort of the positions or platform or ideology of these folks? And I ask that even for a bigger reason. One, because I think it's important to sort of know who we may be working with, but also, you know. Maybe unfortunately, the Christina School Board has been in the news with a lot of controversy and chaos that we've talked about. And so when you see a certain kind of person step up, you have to say, okay, are we stepping up as Monica is? Because this needs to be done. You've committed 5 years to it already, and you think this is the time where I can do it. Somebody thinks they can make a back run because of the sort of chaos going around. I mean, do we have a feeling about maybe – I'm not going to ask you to endorse anyone – but what we know about these folks and their background in education or have they been active as maybe volunteers? What do we know about them?
I just want to throw in that a background in education, not a requirement.
No.
Not necessary at all. Whatever. This is people who need to come and follow these checklists. In fact,
fair point.
I almost feel like a background in education, it's almost like when you are a doctor and then you have to go to get medical stuff, right? I don't want to discourage anybody.
But
know too much.
Yeah, fact. That's a
right.
Great point.
But I don't want anybody to think anybody can do this job.
Yeah, I take that point. And again, I guess my question wasn't even that. Whatever your background in education, you know, we're gonna sort of weigh them out and see which one's better. Just as a point of like, what have you done? What's your background? I guess. But no, I take that point. Yeah, I mean, it's better if you don't. Like, if it's like one person who's just a parent who's come to some of these meetings and thought to themselves, "Wow, this isn't working. Let me try to help out."
That's how I ended up on the board.
Yeah, like
more and more volunteering, and then I'm like, "Okay, they're not asking the right. Like, why are we not asking questions? Like, what's going to happen immediately after this decision? How would this decision affect 5 years from now, 10 years ago? Like, why are we not asking those type of questions? And So yeah, I put my hat in the ring and here.
And again, and I know this is a there's an open lawsuit, so people aren't really talking about it too much. But if I'm a parent in the district, or I'm active, even if I'm, you know, I live there and I'm paying taxes to the district, and I see, you know, decisions being made by a block of board members that maybe I don't understand, but I go to try to get some information about it, and I'm told that I can't know why you dismissed the superintendent, for example. That might be an impetus for me to be like, no, this isn't going to stand. So a regular person would be perfect for that.
Absolutely
yeah.
perfect.
Because yeah, we don't know why we dismissed the superintendent. We're on the board. We've taken our oath.
I guess that's what I mean. Like, yeah, I mean, I could see somebody just being, well, if you're not discouraged and think, well, forget about this, we can't even deal with this. If that sort of is the impetus for you to then go and run and stand for this, then that's actually probably a good thing.
Yeah, my hat's off to people who step up in these type of positions, volunteer. Not easy. I will say, as hard as it has been the last couple of years, and I've had, you know, quite the challenges, the rewarding part of our staff in the Christina School District are phenomenal. And I know our scores don't show that, but it says more about the challenges of a large part of our population than it does about our staff. In fact, the fact that our kids are doing as well as they are in a lot of ways is a credit to our staff. We're in a teacher shortage. Every single one of them could find an easier job someplace else, and they're not. Every single one of our district office could find an easier job, possibly for more pay, just about anywhere else, and they're not. Despite taking on a lot of headache from the current board. And some of it, there are personal attacks happening behind the scenes. And it breaks my heart to see that when they're doing their best and going all out.
Well, if I find out about any personal attacks, I'll be doing personal attacks right back. Believe me. Now, that's what always sort of impresses me about Doug, because you sort of take it all in stride and you're like, you know what? I'm suing in the court of chancery. How about that? You know, it's like, you know, you don't, even when you get quoted, you know, in the paper after one of these contentious meetings, or, you know, something's happening, of course they go to you for a quote. You're just like, I don't know, these people, they're crazy. This doesn't make any sense to me. I asked them what they did. They didn't tell me. So I don't know. You seem to have a good sort of disposition. And I think that also sort of encourages people to maybe stand up and say, hey, I can work with these folks, because they have an idea, they have a better idea of how this should work. They have a plan of how to sort of get it moving in the right direction. You know, their heart's in the right place, that type of thing. You know, anytime you do your business sort of in secret, and you have ulterior motives, and you're associating with sort of suspicious or questionable people, like, I'm, you know, you can kind of read between the lines here. Yeah, I mean, people are turned off by that, and you know, it's not, you know, I can't imagine, you know, the regular parent or the regular person who's following this, or going to, you know, a meeting here and there to hear about what's going on at the school district, to think, oh yeah, you know, fire the superintendent, don't tell us. That's cool. Yeah. Okay. Like, what person is going to be like, yeah, that's what you should be doing. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Rob, do you hear that? It's the Highlands Bunker breaking news sting. And I have another Bunker exclusive for you.
Nice.
So hi, I'm Doug Manley, member of Christina School Board, and I endorse Monica Moriak for president in July.
Yes, we got to do it. We got
to
do it.
He doesn't have to do it.
You got your first official endorsement. Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean,
all that matters is who votes in July.
Yeah, and that, I mean, and that's sort of why I was so sort of interested in who may be filling this other role soon, because, you know, hopefully that person, either one of those candidates, has the sort of the same mindset. Hey, let's put this behind us. Let's get a plan together, you know, whether and try to hit these benchmarks to get this thing on the right track. And I think starting out with the understanding that we're here for governance, we're here to partner with the managers and the administration, and the reason we're doing that is for the betterment of the student body.
I would argue we're not partnering because they're in charge. This is not a partnership.
Okay, fair.
This is governance, right?
Yeah, fair.
I think the idea that partnering, I think that goes down the wrong road.
Got you.
And I also, contrary to certain members' beliefs, president and vice president are administrative roles only. There is no executive board officially in school boards in the state of Delaware. We don't get to make, we are not allowed, and it's unethical for us to be making any decisions or having any direct direction of the superintendent or any staff members in the school district without having an agenda item that was noticed in an agenda at least 7 days in advance, where we have a discussion, we make a motion, we have a vote. And that vote of seven of us, the board is a single entity comprised of seven members, then that vote is what directs the superintendent to then direct his staff. And so it is solely administrative, so that there can be a single member that the superintendent coordinates with to make sure our agendas are out. There are things where if speeches need to be given or if the board needs to be represented someplace, theoretically that might start with the president. Although equally, and Mr. Patton did suggest this at one point, any members could come, and, you know, if you wanted to speak at this, right? Like there's a bunch of things if it comes up. We haven't been asked to speak at a lot of things recently, but
No, and thank you for that clarification. You're right. That was a poor, based on what you even said before. Yeah, it's not that. So yeah,
it's not a partnership.
I appreciate that.
And it's not executive. I think that's the thing that gets lost in the weeds, and people like to believe that, oh, well, if I get president, then I get to control things. President is not any more important of a board member than anybody else. They don't have any more say. They should not be doing anything else. Like, I encourage people to visit schools and listen. Just observe. See the kids in action. See the teachers in the classroom so that you don't ask these questions about, well, we need to make sure the whatever the standard is that they're working on that week is shared with the family members and with the students. Well, if you're in the classroom, you will see that the teachers post whatever standard that you're working on the board or on their way every week. So they refer to it. They say, you know, we're learning this because this is important standard for you to learn, right? It's important to understand how numbers relate to each other from a positive to negative standpoint. I'm not a teacher. Don't know if that's even the thing. But, and so we're going to practice these things so that you can understand this standard. That's posted. If you're in the building, you'll know.
Yeah. I guess the only question I would have about that then is that somebody may ask, use that construction. Somebody may be asking. So if that's the case, which I understand, the president and vice president's role is just to sort of run the meeting,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Run the meeting and liaison with the superintendent. So if there are things that need to be dispersed, right? We set up the agenda. There's an agenda prep, so we're kind of going back and forth. When we follow this new procedure, the agenda is largely going to be set for months on end. We will know what we're going to, what standard, what part of the goal we're going to do. We're going to have weeks. Meetings should last less than a couple of hours. The things that
not to bring your pillow. You see, like there's two people left. Those take a little nap like this with the on the.
Yeah, no, it should be fairly straightforward. And the information that the goal is to make sure this information is available to the public as well, right? So there is a lot of things that we can do to improve things, and a lot of that is thankful to some of the technology we have today. But we need to leverage that. We need to use that. I will say our staff is excited by this training as well. Our senior staff, they're already looking for how they can improve things. We're already talking with our CFO about how do we adapt our CBOC, which is the Citizens Budget Oversight Committee, where we talk about the monthly reports. And it's open to the public.
Yeah, Doug gave us a tutorial.
It's required by law.
It was actually
But how do we adapt that?
It was actually great. I got a lot of feedback after that because I think people know that there's some process in place about the budget oversight and how that works. But the last time Doug was here, he kind of went through it point by point. People, like, you can see the numbers. People are like, I need to listen to this.
Doug has been a boon for our school district in many ways, but certainly along the ways of how do we make this better? It's not that that discussion hasn't been happening, but Doug has definitely brought in a nice variety of ideas and his talents in software. But how do we adapt these meetings so that it also is showing more directly student outcomes and how the financing is going to improving student outcomes? Because that's our goal, what children know and are able to do.
Well, I'm so happy that a close friend and comrade of the show and a new friend and comrade of the show are really taking it upon themselves to, like, get this thing back on track. You know, it seems like it derailed. Okay, these things happen. You know, different interests get their nose in and try to pull some whatever they're trying to pull. We don't even know. But I really think people should pay attention to this as a lesson in how to take a derailment and put it back on track. So I'm rooting for all of this. I'm rooting for the decision in the Court of Chancery. I'm rooting for the Board of Elections to open this other position up, and hopefully two new members of the board can buy into this plan to get this thing back on track, because public schools get a lot of heat, and you mentioned it too. It's like, oh, look at these test scores, look at this. Well, yeah, a lot of that has to do with not going about the work in the way that you're describing it, having the wrong sort of goals, having an ideology that says, actually, we're not going to do that. We can't do that. We're in the box, whatever it is. And so I hope people pay attention to this, because this is sort of a framework for how to get a lot of stuff back on track.
And it might seem crazy right now, but, we truly think that Christina School District can be the model for mm-hmm. all of the other districts in the state going forward. Once we get ourselves back on track, we think that the approach we have, the direction we're going to take things, we think every other district will be emulating this within a couple of years.
You're going to be the next Secretary of Education, maybe. The Honorable Douglas Manley, Secretary of Education.
Pretty sure that requires a doctorate.
Doctor, we'll call him a doctor. I can give you. I'm a doctor of journalism. Everybody knows that. No, I'm just kidding. We can work that out. We'll figure something out. Write you up something. We'll, whatever you need.
Is that one of the things we can fix in post?
Yeah, it'll be like, actually, Doug's a doctor of education. We did not know that. I mean,
look, better you than me.
If somebody can be a Christina school board member from Rawalpindi, then I guess you could be a doctor of education too. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming in. And like I said, I really appreciate the stance that you guys are taking on, like, public policy, getting your ducks in a row and saying, we're going to turn this around. It's going to take time. It's going to be incremental steps. But once we get it back on this track, we know that this is what we need to do. It's going to be a standard thing. Like you said, the agenda is almost going to be set. We know that we're working towards these milestones down the track, and we just have to put our trust in that. And when people are working so hard and have that sort of background, that it's for students' outcome. The whole thing is to make sure that the students go through the system, and at the end, that they're prepared to go to work, go to school, go to university, whatever they want to do.
They have freedom of choice.
So, I'm very happy to hear that you're shouldering this burden of trying to get this school board back on track. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm thankful for Doug, and I'm thankful for Dr. Trout, Amy Trout, and I'm thankful for our staff. I will say I firmly believe Dr. Shelton was trying to move us in that direction, and I think he would have embraced this effective school boards training wholeheartedly. And I just, I wonder if that's just not what Mr. Patton was interested in.
As Doug knows, we're going to stay on this. You know, we'll have you back in the summer to see what has transpired with these two, hopefully two open seats, how quickly they're filled, by whom, and how the council reorganizes or reconstitutes itself in July as mandated. And that will tell us whether the train's back on the track. So that's what I hope.
Yeah.
Doug, and I hope that all of you become paying subscribers to the Highlands Bunker on Patreon.
I hope so, too. Thanks for mentioning it. I mean, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/thehighlandsbunker. If you just go there, you just click the button, $5 a month. Anyway, so you guys know left is best, and yeah, we'll get back to you in a minute. Cheers.